I'm attempting to write an essay on love. My teacher would not have bothered about it. Because invariably, it is the most misunderstood word. No matter what is said about love, we think it is the polaric opposite of hate. So you find if you're in a relationship, whether it is a spouse, whether it is a lover, whether it is a colleague, some days you really feel love, other days you don't. Something happens, love is enhanced, something else happens, hate may come up. Because the framework of daily living is duality of every conceivable kind, up, down, left, right, night and day, black and white, pleasure and pain, me and the other, love and hate. In the morning, your partner gives you a gift, you feel tremendous love. In the afternoon, the partner says something you don't like, the love is gone. So Advaita talks about and points to that love which transcends the polarities. That is the love it conveys. That love, which is a total acceptance of the other, exactly the way God created them. You may find there is someone who pushes your buttons more than others. And in that moment, you understand that this person is acting and saying things based on their conditioning and their nature, precisely the way God made them. It could not be any other way. And then you find that force of repulsion or hatred no longer arises. You may still not like what this person is saying, but because the sting of doership is pulled out, you find your reaction changes. Osho referred to this as cold love. It is perceived as cold. It is not cold. It is Buddha-like, as he said. It is Buddha-like. But because it does not have passion in it, the me, the individual, feels this is not love. You see, because let's take that one antagonist in your life. Your brother may be, parent, sibling, anyone. And you accept that this person is the way God has made them. We don't get along. That is a fact. We've tried our best. That is a fact. But I accept deep down, this is the way the game was meant to be played. Now, if I accept that this person, with all their flaws, with all their so-called imperfections, is made precisely the way I have been made, with my flaws and imperfections. When I accept everyone has been created by the same source, then my relationship is no longer with individuals anymore. It is with God. If I see God behind everyone in my life, the person who has troubled me at work, and the person who has been most kind to me, both created by the same power, then I develop an even vision, a sense of neutrality, and then I find it much simpler to navigate all the relationships in my life. Then one no longer loves people because of what they say and do, but in spite of what they say and do. This is what sometimes people feel in the presence of a master, because they are accepted totally the way they are, which gives them comfort. They know that no one is judging them. Who is to judge whom? Two puppets in a play are judging each other. Who is to judge whom? And we place so much emphasis on the spoken word that sometimes we see love in action and it gets missed by us. We are not aware of it. Some small action someone has done for me, because I'm tuned to hear words, I love you. Ah, that feels good. The expressed word. What happens if someone's nature is not expressive? Does it mean this person does not love? Then we have love in action. But one has to be sensitive enough to see a person's actions and where they are coming from. And then is the silent love, where you're doing your own number, saying what you want, behaving the way you want, yet the person who loves you in silence accepts and meets you in the field of presence. This love gets completely missed. I had a most beautiful experience a few months ago. I was visiting a spiritual master in the hills. Never met him before. And I went at a time when I knew it would not be too crowded without hundreds of people there. And so like me, there were a few others. We were sitting having chai. And he was sitting, let's say, where I am sitting, and there was a chair here. So I went a few chairs away to sit, assuming his close devotees would like to be next to him. And he called out to me and said, no, you come and sit here. So I sat with him, next to him. Then what happened is, one of his devotees got prasad for everyone and gave us one each, which comes in that, it comes in crinkled wrap paper when prasad is greasy or oily. So I had it and my hands were very oily and greasy, full of ghee. Now, while he was talking to one of his devotees, I saw his hand moving towards mine to catch it and hold it. And I quickly withdrew. So he was a bit taken aback because he said, "Arey, ye kya ho raha hai?" So I said, "Baba, my hands are dirty. It's full of ghee. I'll wipe it first. Otherwise, your hands will get dirty." And he said, "Is it so?" And he grabbed my hand and with his palm started cleaning it like this, taking all the grease onto his palm. And then he saw it. He said, "Now it's clean." And he held it. You see?
Yeah.
This is love.
Yeah. And now you got it from his hand back. This is love. What you give is what you get.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is the point.
Yeah.
Small actions reveal so much, but we tend to miss them because just like when we read a book, we are reading the words. We are not placing any attention on the blank paper on which the words are written and without which the words could not be. Whereas the sage is immersed in that blank paper on which there are appearances. Some come, some go, mostly transient, but because we are programmed to externalize and objectify, we see objects and they create a reaction because that's the nature the way we are programmed, this field of presence or silence is missed. And this world is a passing show. You're today, gone tomorrow. People you meet today, you don't meet tomorrow. Things you read today, you don't read tomorrow. But our attention is always focused on what's out there. That is why my teacher was very fond of the four words in the Bible. This too shall pass. Happy time comes, pleasure arises, this too shall pass. Painful time comes, sadness arises, this too shall pass. The natural result is being calm. The greatest siddhi is what I believe Ramana Maharshi called it, being calm. And when I start living this way, seeing everyone in my life being moved by the hand of God, that to me is the ultimate bhakti. One may be the greatest bhakt in one's own temple, shrine, or at a mandir, and pour one's heart out to the deity and come out and my relationships are in a mess. Wouldn't that be a limited bhakti? Whereas here, I just accept that each one, particularly those who trouble me, are shaped by the same source, then that is a living bhakti. That is why my teacher would emphasize, you are that is all right. So the real transition is the realization that that is you, me, he and she. That is the transition.
I didn't get the point. I didn't get this point. I was not able to comprehend.
You see, Nisargadatta Maharaj's book, I Am That. That is also Mahavakya. I am Brahman, or whatever you may call it. I am that. But the point is that is all this too.
It's inclusive.
Yes, it is not just that you are that. Because you may be that, but in daily life, it's a mess. But when I see that the manifestation is a reflection of the source, not apart from it, I am dealing with that. Day to day.
So the others are that?
Everything is that. There's nothing apart from it. Because the source can only be one, not two.
Yes.
You see, as a child would say, when we take God and the devil, who created the devil? God did not create the devil. Which would mean, if God did not create the devil, who created the devil? Another source? You see?
So it's the source is the one?
Is the one and only. And in this realm of duality comes God and devil. As the human mind splits it. The human mind splits the unicity into duality because the way it has been structured.
The human mind creates the duality.
It is programmed
not the source, to. Not the source.
Through the human mind.
Why would you do that?
Exactly.
Why would you do that?
In order to know itself, it has to first unknow itself.
Unlearn.
And that is the Leela. See, the baby is pure being before the ego is formed. The baby cannot differentiate the Bal Krishna roop of the baby. Anything may come in front of it and give it a toy or something. There's no differentiation. But then the ego kicks in. And then the understanding comes, I am separate from this thing. The me and the other.
So we come innocent and pure, we create our ego, then we have to unlearn how to destroy the ego.
We are always innocent and pure because we didn't create the ego, the source created the ego.
Again, why? Why would the source do something that would be harmful to man?
Because in order to know itself, in order to know itself, it has to fragment. And then comes the journey back to the source. And out of, as Krishna would say, out of millions and millions of seekers, only one knows me in truth. So, out of all of humanity, some people, by the hand of God, are placed onto a spiritual journey. And out of those, some are brought closer to God, you could say. That is the Leela. But that is my whole point. Everyone is innocent. Because the person who troubled you the most, we have no idea how that person's parents treated this individual. What was his or her conditioning in childhood? What happened? What transpired? What setbacks, what tragedies did this person face? I don't know. So wouldn't you say that this person is innocent in that sense?
Yes, because I didn't know this past or her past.
And he is shaped or she is shaped by factors beyond his control. Yet, I have to do what I have to do. But now, because the sting of personal doership is pulled out from the equation, I find that I am able to respond and not react. That is what happens. Yes, Agastya. Agastya, right?
Yeah.
It's quite easy to remember. It's not a common name. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. So, did you think about what we spoke of last time, and was it of any benefit?
Yeah. Like one query, that why would God create someone like a terrorist or a gangster that will cause like so many deaths, so many people to die? Why did he give that kind of mindset to anybody?
Yes, this is what many people would ask my teacher. And his answer would be, why did God create Mother Teresa? Why did God create Ramana Maharshi? Why did God create Francis of Assisi? You see? Because this is again the realm of duality. There'll be good people and there'll be not so good people. Seems like a cruel God, but ultimately everything is in balance. Ultimately, human beings have inflicted torture on themselves since centuries. Why? Because of this misperception. And we have to accept this as the divine will. Thereafter, we have to decide, what can I do in this situation? How can I deal with it to the best of my ability? And I gave the example last time, I don't know if it was last month, when the Kargil war happened. My teacher was seeing the news, seeing the coffins being brought to the airfield. Pain arose that what is going on? And so the thought came, what can I do in this situation? And he realized, he saw an ad in the paper of some Kargil war fund, and he decided, I can send some money based on my capacity towards the welfare of the soldiers. He did that, and thereafter, job was done. So pain arises for the sage also. But the sage does not get involved in that, and then in the duration of time, get stuck in that moment. He does what he can do because he knows the results are in God's hands. With anything in life, it is the involvement which is the thinking mind, which is either in a dead past or an imaginary future, imagining situation upon situation upon situation. That is what happens. And you see, even behind hate, there is love. Because if you hate someone, it means you love yourself. It still comes back to love. Hate is a misperception. When I can accept that the same consciousness which is speaking through you is listening through me, when this understanding dawns that there is only one consciousness, then I find a radical shift in my daily living. So forget the extreme polarities. In your own daily living, think of your friends, think of your family, cousins maybe, anyone. And ask yourself, whom do I love the most, maybe? Or whom do I not get along with at all? And just sit for 5 minutes, think about this. Who are my troublemakers? Who are the ones I love the most? And just see. As my teacher would say, the seeing is the only doing necessary. just see that everyone is acting based on their script, the way they were meant to. Now what happens, you realize there's no point me thinking how this person should and should not behave, how he should be, how she should be. What's the point? I may have a preference that I would prefer that this person didn't say these things. But now I know they are the way they are made. I know I may even tell them that, hey, look here, what you're saying, it hurts me. I may try. If that arises, I say it. But whether or not saying that makes a difference is God's will. Then I let it go. So I don't harbor a grudge. I don't detest people anymore. And I find that I wouldn't even say loving people for who they are. I just find compassion arises more and more. I told a very rich friend of mine that the day you stop taking your friends out for dinner and paying the bills, you'll know who your true friends are. But she's too scared to do that. What if they don't contact me? We even buy our love. We even buy our love without knowing it. So if this is the way going forward at your young age, you can view people, you will find it takes you very far. When my general manager ran away with most of my hard-earned money, obviously there was pain. It was hard-earned money. But I distinctly remember thinking, God knows what motivated him to do that. Was he in some deep financial crisis which I didn't know about? Or was it his nature? And I realized it is pointless even going deeper into this because it happened. Then I met the lawyer and the lawyer said, you must file a case. And I asked myself, do I really want to do that? Do I want to go to the Indian courts for 15, 20 years? Plus, is it my nature? And it was not my nature. So I went back to the lawyer and I said, I'm sorry, but I don't have it within me to file a case. And she said, you're being foolish. You have to fight for your money. It is your right. It has been snatched from you. I said, you're absolutely right. I don't mean to undermine your advice. But if my nature was such, like I have two friends, they are landlords and they are fighting 20, 30 cases in the courts and very happy to do it. I mean, it's like, it gives them joy because they learn the law. They know how to argue themselves. They know what to tell the lawyers. I'm not made that way. And so I told the lawyer, I said, see, I've thought about it. I'm not, you may call it, I'm running away. So be it. But I don't want to do that which is not in my nature to. So what happened was, no hatred arose for this general manager. Pain arose. Pain arose. That pain did not translate into hatred and malice. How dare he have done that to me? That didn't happen for me. I just accepted it as the will of God. That's it.
But isn't it God, you are you willing to stand up for us? Otherwise, the incidents will repeat.
Yes.
He has done it to us. He'll do it to 10 other people also. Right?
Maybe or maybe not. And if it is in your nature to stand up, by all means stand up. Everyone has to honor their nature. Everyone has to honor their nature. It is an injustice, no doubt. That is why when the robbers came to Ramana Maharshi and he saw his own devotees picking up sticks and he told them, he said, it's their nature to rob. Is this your nature? They are doing what they are designed to do. What are you doing?
It is not about nature being to whatever is wrong. Even Krishna said that you have to stand for it, you have to punish.
What is wrong?
Sometimes killing itself is a mercy because they are going to further go into their distinct.
So. Absolutely. But what is wrong and what is right? You tell me.
So that is basically why is there a death I agree with. Because your question was what is wrong, what is right?
Mm.
It's wrong to take life of another human being.
Mm.
And let the court and the law of the prevailing law of the land decide whether he should be hung or not.
Absolutely. If he is caught.
I think her point was if a person is caught, it is proven in the due process of law that he like like I know the terrorist or maybe last young woman. It was proved after 15 years of how he was got back, proved he was involved, he killed 369 people, it was blood on his hands. They haven't been
yes.
Perfect. That justice.
Yes, because all actions have consequences. But as my teacher would say, let's say a murder happens. Now various scenarios are possible. One is the murderer gets caught, the other is the murderer does not get caught.
Yes,
who decides that?
I can't say.
Then the murderer gets caught, but there's not enough evidence and he has to be let go of.
Yes,
who decides that? Then the other possibility is the wrong person is convicted for the murder he didn't commit. Who decides that? So things take their natural course. All actions have consequences. All actions have consequences. But the sage knows all we can do is try. What happens is God's will. Would anyone else like to share anything?
I would like to ask a question.
Sure.
So,
is this your first time here?
Yeah. I've been Sai Devotee's speech and
right.
The living environment of Sai Baba.
You have enormous amount of peace, sir. I mean, it's very peaceful sitting here talking to you. I'm overwhelmed actually seeing you. I'm just seeing you. And are you the same person I saw on the TV? And what's the feeling? I saw all your lectures on Gyaneshwari and living there. So I thought I have to meet you. So I'm, sometimes I'm confused in terms of there are two things. Yeah? I mean, one way says that you have to get purified. Actually, the whole funda is to get purified. The soul has to get purified before reaching God, right? So you do the path of bhakti, right? They say that keep taking his name, keep reminding about his leelas. Sai Baba will say in Sai Charitra, bas mera naam lo, mera naam japo, mera paath karo, theek hai. You are saying living the values of Sai Baba. So I get confused sometimes that when I'm doing my work, right, I'm a human, right? There is an I. It gets confusing sometimes. What is that I supposed to do? It's just the I supposed to just get up in the morning, do their duties, and when the mind is not doing anything, just take his name. Is that what I was made for? And when I'm doing the duty, I have to be full best, just do my best. Is that what I was made for? Is that my dharma? As a human being,
you know, my teacher would say it very simply. Too simple. It's so simple that it's boring.
Yeah.
The purpose of life is the living of it. The purpose of life is the living of it, which means when there's work to be done, my working mind is fully engaged in its pristine purity. Work is being done by me to the best of my ability. Because the thinking mind, which is the ego, is not intervening. Now, when there is no work, what happens?
Thinking, future or past.
If my mind is designed that way. Or I might find that I have a vacant mind. I may get up and say, let me go for a walk. Let me sit in silence. Let me read a book. Whatever it is. You see? The whole point is, if I am studying Sai Baba's leelas, it doesn't mean to mug up the leela by heart that this dog went there this time, this happened and the food was kept. No. It means what is there, what is my learning in it? Have I understood the lesson behind it? How does it apply in my daily living, which unfortunately is missed most of the time? You see, because his popularity was because of the miracles and chamatkars, so people are going in the hope of that, whereas he himself has said, I give people what they want so that they may want what I want to give them, which is what? But that has gone out of the window. But if I live my life in peace, harmony and equipoise, facing what comes because I have no control over it, as Maharaj would say, you have no idea whether pleasure or pain will come next moment. I have no idea. Nobody does. And so, I know this is the nature of life and living. Sometimes pleasure, many times pain. And when it comes, maybe, how do I deal with it? That is my road to sukha shanti. That is why the Buddha would say, samsara is dukkha, nirvana is shanti. Samsara is dukkha, nirvana is shanti. But most importantly, they are not two. The shanti is to be found through this.
So what is the purpose of the creation? Like, why he asked in a different way than I created devil and this thing. Just correct. There is always purpose for everything. There is a devil because otherwise I will not differentiate what is good versus what is bad. What I should not do also I should know. Right? I have to become something. But what was in his mind when he just created his creation and created so many players? We are all players in this world stage. Just. Well, in the Granth it says, in Vedas it says that he was sitting alone, so he thought, let's create something.
Yes, because awareness is unaware of itself as awareness when there is unicity, because there are no two. Awareness is unaware of itself as awareness and is aware of itself as I am. So, one could say the source consciousness got fragmented into the multitude to get to know itself. And more importantly, as my teacher would say, a painting can never know why its painter painted it.
True. True, absolutely. You just end somewhere. You just can't,
you see,
know.
Exactly. That is when the intellect gives up.
Yeah. That's.
And says, all right, there's no end to questions. I can think of 10 more.
Yeah.
Then what happens? What is your name?
Kanchan.
Then what happens, Kanchan, is I no longer seek answers to questions. My questions start dissolving and my mantra in life becomes so be it. If I feel like doing japa in the morning, I do japa. If I'm not inclined to it, I don't.
Absolutely, sir. That's what happens.
But this japa is the japa of peace of mind. What this teaching does, it annihilates the thinking mind. You see, it's very simple. Today, God came to you and told you, I'm going to take away hatred, malice, blame, condemnation, jealousy, envy, pride, arrogance, guilt, shame, and so on and so forth. Gone from your mind. What is left?
Peace.
That's what this teaching does, as you know it.
Yes.
It kills.
Destroys.
It annihilates the sense of doership, which I have accused others of, as well as myself. Then I'm free, my working mind is free to deal with the task at hand.
Everyone has to go back to Godhead, right? Find it, do their stuff and then just return back and peace.
Well, you could say that. And the joke is, everyone has been given the gift of deep sleep, which is the absence of the me and my story, right?
That's when the ego doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Everyone has been given this free gift, but it gets missed. What is the difference between your deep sleep and my deep sleep? Is there any?
No, it's deep sleep.
But can I remember that when I'm arguing with someone? That's the other thing which happens, you know. You find you're no longer trying to win an argument. You may mention it once, twice, then you drop it.
You don't get into the argument.
You see, these changes start happening.
Yes.
You say, theek hai now, you know, you're right. You are right. From your point of view, you're right. You try it, people get very frustrated. I've tried it. I'll tell you what frustrates them even more.
He can't get the last word.
Exactly. You tell them, you are absolutely right based on your conditioning, which God made. Then they'll really be frustrated.
It frustrates them immensely.
But this is a very important point. You know, because next time I find myself saying something, I must understand that it's my limited view, my limited conditioning, which is making me say what I'm saying. It's very limited. The humility to understand that whatever is my view about anything is extremely limited by my genetics and my conditioning brings a sense of humility that I could be wrong. The other could be right. That's what starts happening. And then one finds one is more and more open to the other. One is open to the other's perspective. One listens to it, digests it, and then decides perhaps there's something valid here or maybe not. Whereas earlier we are shut. That change starts taking place. And it's very beautiful when we see that our whole approach to our relationships in life are getting transformed this way. Our views of people, our innate likes and dislikes, no longer involve individuals as such. We find all these creases are getting ironed out. So in my building, I might have two neighbors, one I'm very fond of, one I'm not fond of at all. Yet, it won't stop me from saying a nice hello to both. Whereas earlier, I would get my defenses up. Because I now see that people can't help being themselves. They can't help it. And sometimes you really think this person must be suffering so much inside to say and do these kind of things. You feel that, you see. You start feeling it. That there must be so much pain inside this person, which is manifesting outwardly as hatred towards others, shouting at people. You can feel that. Then you know some flame has got lit in the heart. The flame of awareness, sensitivity, receptivity. That starts happening.
There's a little confusion, but every day I have a new takeaway from that candle burning.
Which is the coffee you sip?
Yes, Cafe Gold. I make it myself because my maid is sleeping that day.
I enjoy my cappuccino.
Cappuccino, but I got that machine, but it's very difficult for me to operate.
I remember once I went to, 2 weeks ago, a new cafe in Colaba. So I knew there's going to be a challenge because I unfortunately like my cappuccino very hot. I like it very hot, though cappuccino is not supposed to be had very hot. Now in London, when you go to a Starbucks and you say extra hot cappuccino, they say, they write it on the cup also, you know, and they will tell you when you pay the money that if it's not extra hot, please let us know, we'll make you an extra hot. That is the way it is there. Here, that kind of training is not there. So
that's why I don't have it in Starbucks.
No, so Starbucks, I have trained the local Starbucks. They say me and say extra hot wala aa gaya. But this new cafe I went to, very trendy.
Okay.
So they had a honey cappuccino. So I said, ma'am, I'd like a honey cappuccino, extra hot. No, that's not the right thing to do. I said, I know, I understand that cappuccino has to be had lukewarm, but in my case, I would like to have it extra. No. So I said, I looked around. I said, do you have a microwave? Yes. I said, could you please heat it up? No. So then I realized that I have a choice.
Yes.
Either I enjoy the lukewarm cappuccino or I change my drink. You see, that was it. I tried.
It didn't work.
And I have to decide as a normal human being. And I took the lukewarm cappuccino. I enjoyed it because it had some special honey flavor. I knew I would not order it again. But that was it. There was no resistance beyond a point. The request was made.
Being aggressive to the staff.
That all falls away. Exactly. That's how life becomes. Precisely. Joel Goldsmith said, your neighbors are not your physical neighbors. Your neighbors are what is going on here. Are those thoughts based on what he and she did to me, said to me, and so on? Those are the neighbors. So the garbage, these are garbage cleaners. this lineage of masters are garbage cleaners. Their job is to remove the garbage of the thinking mind. And when that is done, what is left is pure presence. Their job is not to inject you with presence, because presence is always ever there. Their job is to remove misconceptions, misperceptions, clean it all up. And garbage cleaners tend to get unnoticed, as we know. Nobody appreciates them. I'll tell you a joke.
Yeah.
There was a burglar.
Yeah.
And he was watching this house, very fancy house, bungalow, of rich people, obviously. And he was waiting for them to go on vacation. So he would burgle it at that time. So that time arrived, and he went there in the night with his empty sack so he could fill it with whatever. And as he approached the house, he heard a voice. Jesus is watching you. So he was taken aback. So he walked 10 steps more towards the bungalow, wondering which window to break. And again he heard this voice, Jesus is watching you. So he thought, is it my conscience? This inner voice of mine, it's very peculiar. He said, I'm not going to listen to it. And he goes very close to the window. And again he hears, Jesus is watching you. So he looks up and he sees a parrot. The pet parrot was in the window. And he's so relieved. He said, the stupid parrot, you're so stupid. I thought it was my inner voice. And the parrot said, Jesus is watching you. So the burglar said, I'm not afraid of a foolish talking parrot. And the parrot replied that you should know that my owners have a Rottweiler called Jesus. Saint Therese, it is believed, once was going through the field. There was a wheelbarrow which she was trying to push with great difficulty, and she was completely tired and exhausted. And she called out to Jesus and said, what is this you're doing, making life so difficult for me? So Jesus replied, don't think of it this way. Think of it that I only make things difficult for my closest of friends. And she said, really, no wonder you don't have many.
Is that true though? Like, does life always translate like that? Because some people have it easy and are still close to God. Like,
no, I believe that, as Ramana Maharshi said, mostly, it is setbacks in life which put you onto the path.
In my case, it's definitely that.
And as he said, if not the first blow, then the second. If not the second, then the third. But mostly it is like that. There are exceptions to the rule, but mostly it is like that. And why is it so? Because I thought something was me and mine.
Yeah.
Whether it was a loved one, whether it is money I lost or whatever it may be. I was identified with something which I lost. So it is generally the loss of something, could be a relationship, could be money, could be health, that puts me on the path. It is the death of something, not the physical death, which may be so, like losing a parent or whatever, but the death of an identification. I may have a massive loss in business and question what life is about. So I'm now, what is this? What is going on? Something happened beyond my control. That is what happens.
But like some people have setbacks. In this case, like for example, my dad, he had several setbacks, but the opening never happened.
Because that was his destiny.
You know,
the destiny is not there.
He learned whatever he had to, but it wasn't
true.
Necessary that he had to, or maybe unknowingly, I don't know.
Yet. We never know what happens tomorrow.
Yeah.
We never know. And you are fortunate, it was your destiny that it worked. Someone else may have gone through the whole process and it didn't work.
How long ago? And then maybe after that.
Yeah. So that is why, you see, there are two ways to look at it. One is the statement, experience enables you to recognize a mistake,
yes,
when you make it.
Yes.
That is one way.
100%.
The other way is that experience is that which allows you to make mistakes, and you keep making mistakes because that is your destiny.
It's not about whether you've learned it or not.
We don't know.
I guess you're right, because when I was making those decisions, analysis, calculations, mixture of good capital, good services, this, that, there was no bond paper guarantee it's going to work.
Exactly. In your case, it did. Right. We may keep making mistakes if that is our destiny.
I've seen my business colleagues do that.
It happens. We don't know. But bottom line is, this is a very practical teaching.
Yes.
It is very pragmatic. It translates into daily living. You can see it unfolding for yourself in your interactions, in the happenings in your life. Very practical. It is like the practical doctor. One lady called him up and said, there's a problem. My husband swallowed a paracetamol thinking it's a peppermint I had left out. It was for me, but he has had it. What should I do? So the doctor thought about it and said, look, let's not waste it. You might as well give him a headache now. Practical.
Make you look quick.